Welcome to a new episode of Interpreting India. From geopolitical complexities to economic uncertainties, India faces critical challenges in its quest for a more prominent role on the world stage. This season, we at Carnegie India continue to bring voices from India and around the world to examine the role of technology, the economy, and international security in shaping India's future.
My name is Kunal Bhandari, and I will be your host for this episode of Interpreting India. In this episode, we will be looking at defense innovation in India. As you all may know, India has recently seen a huge surge in its defense exports. Also, given the significance of secure and trustworthy supply chains, the topic of defense and innovation and indigenization has never been more relevant. To discuss this and much more, we have with us Mr. Ajay Kumar. Mr. Ajay Kumar is a non-resident senior fellow at Carnegie India. He also served as the Defense Secretary of India between August 2019 and October 2022, and as the longest serving Defense Secretary in the Ministry of Defense, where he also served as a secretary in the Department of Defense Production. As the Defense Secretary of India, he was the key architect of several major transformations, including restructuring of higher defense management in the country and formation of the Chief of Defense Staff in the Indian Armed Forces. Mr. Ajay Kumar is also credited to have transformed the defense industry ecosystem under Atmanirbhar Bharat. He also originated the Innovation for Defense Excellence, or the IDEX program as it's called, a startup ecosystem which today powers new technologies in defense, space, drones, AI, and much more. Mr. Ajay Kumar is currently a distinguished visiting professor at IIT Kanpur, where he has also designed a new course on economics and geopolitics. He's also the recipient of several awards, including citation with the Prime Minister of India, Champion of Change Award, Electronic Leader of the Year 2013 Award, and Sarabhai Award, among several others. Sir, welcome to Interpreting India.
Hi, Konark. Thank you for having me.
Now, sir, with that being said, let's move over to the first question, which will touch upon the topic of defense innovation. As we all know, the recent war in Ukraine and the Israel-Hamas conflict in the Middle East may have provided valuable lessons when it comes to the nature of warfare in the coming years or decades. Do you see any key takeaways from these conflicts when it comes to military modernization in terms of what should be procured by the armed forces of India in the coming years and decades? Or is there any piece of platform or weaponry or artillery which the Indian government should look at more closely?
Yeah, Konark, you know, what is most noticeable in the current wars, you know, you mentioned about Ukraine and, you know, Israel-Hamas war, is that while the relevance of the conventional warfare continues, the battlefield is changing. And we are increasingly seeing extended non-linear battle space, which is multi-domain across spectrum of operations. If we look at it, you know, we see particularly three major trends. One is that the contract war is becoming more kinetic, more multidimensional. The soldier of today is better equipped with the latest modern gadgetry. There is increasing focus on net centricity, where most of the everything that is in the war is connected. And even when there is contact, there is greater autonomy. You are seeing autonomous robots as soldiers, autonomous tanks, etc. And, you know, there is the increasing use of autonomous systems across platforms. You're seeing autonomous soldiers, you're seeing autonomous tanks on the ground level itself. But increasingly also, we are seeing the non-contact aspects of the war. We have seen this, some of this we have seen over the years. For example, we see that cyber war is becoming increasingly important. And this has been going on for some years now. But what we are also seeing is, and which was a witness very prominently in the current wars, was the information war, where the reality and the perception that is created are two different things, you know, altogether. We are also seeing increasing use of remotely piloted autonomous platforms, aircrafts, drones. And these are things which are increasingly in witness. I just want to add, while we may not have seen direct use of other forms like space in these wars, but in terms of surveillance and in future in terms of actual possibilities of militarization of space cannot be ruled out. So we are actually seeing a totally new kind of a warfare form which is emerging, while we also continue to see that the conventional form of warfare where, you know, armed forces go and occupy territory, they go and fight and establish their influence in the zone of conflict, those continues as going along.
Sure, sir. Sir, your point on the fact that the warfare is moving on to a domain where essentially a lot of the weaponry will be non-contact is well taken. And if you look at the military modernization programs of several other countries as well, US, for example, they've come up with this new program called the Replicator Program, which is basically seeking to procure material which is attainable in nature. Basically, it's dispensable and really, you know, sort of lending itself in a battlefield where the nature of warfare is increasingly multi-domain and non-contact, as you put it. This brings me to my next question, which is about military modernization. As I spoke about how several countries have gone about reforming their procurement programs, this question is going to be more about the opportunities for the defense industry in India. Sir, as we have seen traditionally, we have seen a focus on the border with Pakistan, but the challenge has mainly been to address the border in China as well. Now, this sort of recalibration of priorities may need or may see a sizable procurement of defense equipment as well. Therefore, the question that comes up at this juncture is, is there an opportunity here for indigenous defense industry as well?
You know, I think I want to make two points. You know, one is in the vision of Viksit Bharat is implicit a secure Bharat. So as India continues to develop in the next 25 years, there is no choice to make sure that we are secure from all contexts. I would not want to say that we have to have security from context A or context B. The second thing is that, as we have discussed, this security has to be multidimensional. Now, coming back to the third is, I must also say that India, as a matter of policy, has never tried to occupy any other country's territory or tried to create undue advantage of its determination to secure itself. So all this that India will be doing is to make sure that we are secure ourselves and we ensure that the world is a better place to live in. Now, coming to the other part of it, you know, does it give an opportunity for India to develop its domestic industry? I think the vision for development of domestic industry is definitely to ensure that India is more Atmanirbhar. India has greater capability to, it make sure that there is, to make sure that we have, we do not depend on other countries and other companies for our needs. But that is, in the end of it, the defense industry has opportunities not only to cater to the needs of Indian Armed Forces, but also to cater to the needs of friendly nations and countries. And this trend we are already started witnessing. A lot of countries are today looking towards India for meeting the demands of arms and ammunition for platforms, especially given the context of the changing nature of warfare. And therefore, the vision for creating a defense industry ecosystem is much bigger than merely catering to the defense industry needs of the Indian Armed Forces.
That's a great segue to my next question, which is essentially about, you know, news. Like I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, we have seen a massive surge in defense exports. And Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman recently announced that India's defense exports would touch approximately 24,000 crore rupees for 2024. So the question which is on many people's minds is, what do you attribute, sir, the spike in these defense exports to? Because not too long back that India didn't have such a robust figure when it comes to defense exports. So what do you attribute this transition to, sir?
No, I think the first reason is that we have increased the overall growth of the defense innovation system and development of new technologies, platforms, which are not as good as the best in the world, but sometimes better than the best. The second thing is that, you know, the opening of the defense industry ecosystem to private industry has played a very important role. It is true that the defense industry ecosystem was, as a policy, was opened during the 2001, during the government of Shri Atal Bihari Vajpayee, but it not much progress was made. And it is only after 2018, during Prime Minister Modi's time, when schemes like Make 2 and IDEX were approved, that we suddenly see new technology solutions developed by the Indian industry coming up in large numbers, at a very reasonable cost, and in a very short period of time. This growth of solutions participation of defense industry has been the second biggest reason for growth of defense exports. If you see the statistics, 80% of our defense growth has been attributed to the private defense industry. Third is the increased desire for the countries world over to diversify the countries from which they are sourcing. As we know, over 3/4 of the world's arms trade is managed by 4 or 5 countries. And of course, India is not one of them. And we are talking of a trade which is worth $500 billion or more. So, countries are now looking to procure more from those nations who do not have any agenda. You know, India is seen as a country which does not have expansionist agenda. And therefore, nations are more comfortable to buy from countries like India. I remember in October 2022 at DEF Expo, there was a stream of ministers who met our defense minister, and many of them showed interest that they would like to source from India a set of new things that our industry, our startups, and our public sectors had developed. So I think these are possibly the main reasons why we see this growth in defense exports. And I would like to add that I do see that this trend should continue.
Well, all valid points, sir. Just picking up on something you mentioned in your answer about, you know, Indian government as, so you've identified how the private sector has sort of, you know, got up to speed, is now developing sort of technologies which are at par with the best in the world, if not much better as well. Second is the fact that the Indian government has put out certain initiatives which have encouraged making India linked to an IDEX. And third is, of course, the desire of countries to diversify from the traditional sources from where they use to procure from. So if I can just pick up on point two, which speaks about how the Indian government has certain initiatives. Now, one key challenge for the country here is that, you know, as it seeks to sort of encourage indigenization of defense equipment production and procurement, the armed forces have very exacting standards and requirements, and sometimes this could lead to a situation, hypothetically speaking, where the indigenous industry is perhaps not able to meet the requirements given the infancy at which it finds itself. So in such a case, is it possible that, you know, the procuring entity might find itself reverting to foreign vendors if such standards are not being able to met? And what do we do in a case like this where we're not able to sort of adhere to the standards put out by the armed forces?
So, you know, I let me make two things, respond by making two points on this. First is that in certain areas, particularly in those emerging technology areas, we have found that the standards by the Indian industry, by the Indian startups, has been as good and sometimes better than the best. And I made that point earlier. In certain other areas where we have traditionally lagged in terms of technology, and we'll take these are technology areas which require significant time and effort by which time we will be able to catch up. I think we may see continued requirement to depend on other places also. So I think that is the first point. The second point I wanted to make is, there has been a huge change in the approach of the armed forces also. For the first time, we are witnessing that armed forces have, not insisted on the approach which they had followed in the past of having very firm, stringent, and difficult to achieve specifications, and have started moving with agile development, wherein, the industry is developing specifications which broadly meets their functional needs. They take a small quantity and through spiral development, encourage them to move forward. The whole approach in this Atmanirbharta has shifted from a rejection of developed products to a hand-holding approach. In fact, in IDEX, this was formally introduced as part of the scheme, and the concerned armed force actually places what is called a project facilitation committee, constituting of the relevant stakeholders, including the testing agencies, the quality and assurance agencies, who works along with the developing industry partner, so that to make sure that they, first of all, they know what the context of development is, share information and other important things, which normally sometimes is a struggle, and then also help them to achieve required specifications of the armed forces. And then, as long as they are meeting the broad functional needs, they seem to be going ahead and using the locally developed solutions. Armed forces recognize that, a locally developed solution, even if it is slightly inferior, it is better than an imported solution because it brings in an element of surprise against the adversary because the adversary really doesn't know what they have. And therefore, this element of surprise, which is one of the biggest tactical element in any war, is something which always will be something which local and indigenous development will support.
Thank you for the answer. You spoke about how the government has transitioned from an approach where it has moved on from a rejection approach to a more hand-holding approach. Now, in line with this, we have seen things like DDF, we've seen things like IDEX. So if I were to ask you, how do you evaluate the success of both of these initiatives? How would you evaluate them, sir?
No, I would say that, the current defense innovation ecosystem is, a result of multiple policy interventions that have been taken by the government. DDF, IDEX, MAKE-2, the decision to earmark 75% of the capital budget for domestic industry, enabling emergency procurement from domestic sources, a collaborative approach amongst all the stakeholders of the government. These are some, and some other policy, the creation of the positive indigenization list, reposing faith in what is developed in India, you see the kind of orders that have been given to Indian developed, you know, fighter jets, trainer aircrafts, helicopters, ships, and so on and so forth, tanks. So each of this, gives huge opportunity, huge confidence in the industry also to move forward. So all of these have collectively contributed to creating the current defense innovation ecosystem. And I think that's the best, way to evaluate how these schemes have worked. The interest that we see today in investing in defense innovation, in defense manufacturing across the country, where we see not only big industrial houses entering, but large number of small MSMEs and startups entering defense industry ecosystem, is possibly a good indicator of how these policy initiatives have been successful.
Sure, sir. I think the fact that the Indian domestic innovation ecosystem has grown by leaps and bounds in the last decade or so, it's sort of also there in the fact that other countries are not keen to partner with India when it comes to launching, joint defense innovation initiatives. One among them is the IndusX, or the India-US Defense Acceleration Ecosystem. This is an admirable attempt by the US and India to sort of enhance cooperation in the defense domain. Now, the IndusX has seen the launch of joint challenges by both sides, and soon it's been reported that we might even see a SOSA, or a security of supply arrangement, and RDD, reciprocal defense procurement agreement, signed between both the countries. So when it comes to the IndusX initiative, what do you see as the next big targets which might be achieved over the coming years?
I think the relationship between India and US has been growing over the years. And this is quite a change from the Cold War period, when India possibly was not seen to be a close ally or close friend of US. India, of course, the growth of defense innovation ecosystem has today spurred the US policymakers to look for collaboration with India, both to take advantage of some of the strengths of the Indian ecosystem, and that includes the present startup ecosystem, the human resource availability, the growth of India's defense industry, and at the same also because of the strategic interests that and strategic alignment that both countries have on issues like Indo-Pacific and other new areas. But the real remarkable change is from the fact that from a time when, for the last 20 years, when US was largely a source of advanced technology and equipment for India, we are seeing a transition that today they are also willing to co-create, co-develop, and co-produce. They are willing to source technology from India. We are seeing Indian industry supplying solutions both in the US, both to the civil and defense markets. So I think this is a huge change, and IndusX is an effort to further accelerate this process, where there are various initiatives that are being taken, both at a strategic level and at an industry level. Recently, under the IndusX initiative, common challenges have been put out. And I understand that the response to these challenges has been very positive. Both sides have taken, industry and startups have taken up these challenges, and progress is being made. We are also seeing that, there is increased collaboration or desire to collaborate between US university system and the Indian university system. And we will see greater exchanges, particularly in areas relating to defense technologies in coming times, as well as in terms of policy discussions with respect to areas of mutual interest. So I think IndusX is a natural progression in the way the relationship between India and US has developed over the last 25 years. And this is one more step in that direction. It is also a critical part of the initiative on critical and emerging technologies, we must recognize that, like I mentioned earlier, it is in the emerging technologies that India has shown distinctly greater capabilities. And, it is in these areas where the world is today racing, the nations are today racing and competing, and bringing the two countries together is something which will provide great strength, not only to India and US, but also for the larger world community, which believes in rules-based order and would like to make sure that, we do not revert to any one nation trying to, dominate the world.
So for the final question on this podcast, I'd like to touch upon something you mentioned about how Indo-6 is also about co-producing, co-developing as well. So in the past, we have seen that certain weapons purchases of defense platforms especially has led to a situation where, Indian entities are sort of keen to indigenize the spare production or the spare part production. And they sort of improve upon these platforms. But the capability to develop these platforms in-house in India is still something which might be interesting. Like you mentioned, India is doing a great bit of work in emerging technologies. But when it comes to traditional defense platforms, is there a possibility that the Indo-6 could probably play a role there as well, sir?
Oh, sure. I mean, there are no boundaries, really. But, if those are possibly easier things to achieve, but I see even a bigger vision for Indo-6, where when we are looking at quantum technologies, when we are looking at space technologies, when we are looking at deep sea technologies, some of these kind of cyber security is such a major issue today, which is facing the world. So in some of these very high tech areas also, we will see work the space, of course, is a new frontier in which we are seeing fair amount of collaboration now that the space sector in India has been opened up. So I think in each of these new and emerging technology areas, we will see a lot of cooperation.
Thank you, sir. I think with that, we have reached the end of our podcast. Thank you so much for your time. This has been an absolute pleasure recording this podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. To make sure you don't miss it, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts from. To learn more about our research and team, you can visit us at carnegieindia.org. You can also find us on social media on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Thank you for listening. See you next time.